I'm John Batchelor with Professor Steve Cohen, New York University, Princeton University, on a cold night in the east coast of the United States, and I'm certain it's equally cold in Kiev and in Moscow. All three capitals watching the news of the U.S. sending sniper rifles to the front lines against the so-called Russian-backed rebels in Ukraine. This does not describe a healthy country in the 21st century. It describes a failed state. So how did we get here? The professor and I have been reviewing, and it didn't begin with Maidan. It certainly began at some point after the Georgia breakup of 2008, but the professor is continuing to identify how Moscow, how the Kremlin, how the leadership, both Putin and Medvedev and all their counselors, saw the threat of Ukraine being embraced, bought, moved into the NATO sphere on the Russian frontier. Please continue, Professor.
And what we're doing, John, is we're reminding ourselves and our listeners that if we don't know the history of most anything, we're going to get everything contemporary wrong. And the history is very important. Push comes to shove in November 2013. And probably quite a few of your listeners will remember this, because as developments became violent, it was shown on American television almost nightly, the scenes of fire and gunshots and barricades in the streets in Kiev. But it began with a rather technical issue. The European Union began to offer former countries allied with the Soviet Union that were not yet in NATO what they called partnership agreements. You remember that?
Yes.
And what it was is it was supposed to be an advantageous trading relation with Europe. Some of these countries, most of which were backward economically in the sense that they didn't produce modern things for export, wouldn't have had much chance to compete on the European markets, but some did. So this agreement was offered to Ukraine. And Russia, in the form of President Putin and Foreign Minister Lavrov, immediately protested and said to the European Union and to Kiev. Now, by the way, a digression. The president of Kiev at that time, however bad a guy he might have been, he's always called corrupt, and I guess he was, but he was elected. Generally speaking, his election was considered the freest democratic election in Ukraine since the end of the Soviet Union. So he was a legitimate president. He had to make a decision whether to sign this agreement or not. The agreement greatly disadvantaged Ukrainian trade with Russia, which I think amounted to about 40% at that time. That's leaving aside the 3 or 4 million Ukrainians who worked then and still work in Russia today, and send their remittances home to support their families in Ukraine. So the relationship between Ukraine and Russia, leaving aside the tens of millions of intermarriages between Ukrainians and Russia, was economically intimate.
As I recall, Steve, as I recall, the Yanukovych represented the party of all regions, I think is what it was called, and his voting strength, at least in the election that most recent election, had been in the eastern part of the country, the industrial heartland, not only of Ukraine but of Russia. That's, for heaven's sakes, that's where all the rockets are made for the Roscosmos, and the western part of Ukraine, never a strong part of Ukraine because it had gone back and forth between Poland and the Austro-Hungarian Empire and Germany for the previous 70 years. That part of Ukraine was anti-Russian, identified with Polish nationalism, very resentful of the Russian aggression, the Soviets, over the last 50 years. And Yanukovych and Kiev were planted to the eastern side, to the western side, whereas the eastern side was pro-Yanukovych. So that it wasn't one country we're dealing with. It was a country that was fiercely divided by tradition, by history, by ceremony, by language, and you'd have to say by partisanship.
And that's correct. I would just add one slight revision, that in order for Yanukovych to have won the 2010 presidential election, he had to run well outside of his basic constituency electorate, which, as you say, was eastern Ukraine, which gives us an interesting contemporary American edge. You know who his advisor was when he ran that campaign.
Yes, a man by the name of Manafort, who was all associated right. with a man by the name of Dole. It's amazing, Steve. They were wandering around in Washington meeting all the dignitaries in 2007.
But here's the important thing. In the false tale that's called Russiagate, Manafort is said to have been pro-Russian and Yanukovych, too, at that time. Exactly the opposite was the case. Manafort, who was advising Yanukovych how to win this election.
And was very well paid, according to the FBI.
I mean, and you're going to tell me the Democratic electoral experts who travel around the world aren't well paid?
No.
This is
I'm not going to tell you that.
Except for one, it's the oldest profession.
Right.
But they do basically the same thing for money. Here's the point. Manafort told Yanukovych, you've got your solid base in eastern Ukraine. Now, that would have included Donbass, where there's now a civil war. That would have included Crimea and the other territories, all the way to Odessa. But it's not enough to win. You've got to run well in central Ukraine. You're not going to carry western Ukraine. So what you need to do is come out in favor of the European agreement to say that you're going to realign Ukraine with the West. And that's exactly what
Steve, you remind me, which is what the West wanted, because they're chiefly agricultural and they wanted to sell their food to Europe. They were not participating in the Ukrainian industrial burst of energy happening on the other side of the river. So, of course, they wanted to go Europe.
But while Russiagate is distorting our own history, it's distorted Ukrainian history, because at that moment, if Manafort was anything in the advice he was giving Yanukovych, the presidential candidate, he was anti-Russian and pro-Western. He was telling Manafort, say you'll sign the agreement.
Telling Yanukovych, say you'll sign.
Yeah.
He was showing him how to be a politician. That's what he was doing.
Exactly. How to increase his vote.
Yeah, say both things simultaneously. Right.
And he did, and he won, and then comes the moment to sign the agreement. Now, Yanukovych was not a rocket scientist, and he wasn't very well informed. But just before he signed, within days, economists show him that if he signs the agreement, in trade, he's going to lose with Russia over a period of time $80 billion. Yanukovych is coming up for re-election. If he signs this agreement, he has no chance of being re-elected. So he asked for a postponement. And that's what triggered the protests in Kiev on Maidan by there were all sorts of people on Maidan, ranging from Democrats to actual fascists. But you'll remember that violence came quickly. Very quickly. So the myth of Maidan as a democratic revolution is just a myth. Anybody who watched the TV, the violence in the streets, knows it wasn't democratic. When you drive a legitimately elected president from office, it's not democratic. The precipitating factor, John, and I don't know if your listeners, I think they'll remember this, but they may not know what we now know, was snipers killed somewhere between 80 and 100 people in the streets. Snipers in a hotel and a couple other buildings. It was widely assumed that these snipers worked for the president of Ukraine, Yanukovych. And it was those killings that ultimately enraged the mob that drove him from the country. We now know, as surely as we can know anything, that those snipers were not sent by Yanukovych. This has been established by all sorts of forensic tests, videos, and the rest, that they came from a group called Right Sector, which was a movement party that was, to use the kindest words, quasi-fascist, and mainly from Western Ukraine. So that was a turning point. There was one other moment, and you mentioned it in your own overview, that just before that, three European Union foreign ministers, it was France, Germany, and Poland, came to Kiev in a kind of panic, seeing that there could be a civil war in the heart of Europe, and they brokered an agreement between the president, Yanukovych, the leaders of the opposition, that agreed that Yanukovych would form a coalition government and they would move up presidential elections. Yanukovych could run again. People didn't think he could win. But this would give the opposition a chance to come to power democratically. The next day, Yanukovych was forced to flee the government. So that attempt at a democratic transition, which, by the way, this has not been widely reported, Obama, then president, and Putin of Russia had a phone conversation about it. Russia was not party to the agreement, nor was the United States, but both had representatives there. So I don't know who called whom, but one said to the other, I believe Putin to Obama, do you support this agreement to end the violence in Kiev, to form a coalition government, leave Yanukovych in place, and have early elections? Obama said, I do. Do you, Putin? Putin said, I do. The next day, Yanukovych was gone.
And so
the chance, John, to avoid what followed, I'm talking about Crimea, civil war, this new militarized Cold War, was lost in a period of 24 hours.
And Steve, when we come back, you have been reading Joe Biden's autobiography, and you want to contribute a fact about those 24 hours and the flight of Mr. Yanukovych from Kiev that triggered the crisis that we now call the Ukrainian Civil War. Professor Stephen F. Cohen, New York University, Princeton University, Russian History Emeritus, the fourth anniversary of the disaster of Ukraine. I'm John Batchelor. If you suffer from back pain, as I do, you owe it to yourself to try the newest breakthrough product for back pain. Put on the Zero Compression Back Brace and zero back pain all day. The Zero Compression Back Brace works where other devices have failed. It's like no other brace. It molds to your body. It's not uncomfortable. It's ultralight, designed not to put any pressure on the spine. It was designed by a nurse who suffered from back pain. She's now out of disability, back to work. You'll feel the difference right away. I mean, right away. It's only $49.95. That's nothing for what it does. No matter what your back condition, sciatica, herniated disc, or simply in pain for too long at your desk, it literally can change your life. If it doesn't relieve your pain, simply return it for a refund within 15 days. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Stephen F. Cohen, New York University, Princeton University, Russian History Emeritus. The website to watch is theeastwestaccord.com, recovering of the events of the catastrophe of Ukraine in the winter into the spring of 2014. But at this moment, it's between February 21st, when Yanukovych, the elected president, helped by Mr. Manafort and other actors in Washington in 2007, the elected president is signing an agreement with European representatives to bring peace to the turmoil in the streets in Kiev. Next day, Yanukovych flees. So there was a phone call sometime between the signing of the decree and Yanukovych's flight, and that phone call is recounted in the new autobiography by the former vice president of the United States, Joe Biden. Steve, you've been reading Mr. Biden's remarks. What have you learned?
Well, it's confirmation of what we knew all along, that in 2013 or thereabouts, President Obama essentially made Joe Biden the proconsul of Ukraine. He turned what was called the Ukrainian Project over to Biden. Biden has always been a cold warrior, an ideological cold warrior against Russia. However liberal or whatever he may be in regard to gender and jobs and all the rest, he has been consistently over the years a very bad force in regard to American-Russian relations. Ukraine brought out the absolute worst in him. Leave aside the circumstance that his son, Hunter, joined the board of the largest oil company, private oil company in Ukraine, as the crisis unfolded. And I believe the company still lists him, Hunter is his name, as being on the board. I mean, this was impropriety of an enormous magnitude that seemed to bother no one. But Biden, for ideological, familial, whatever other reasons, was intimately tied to Ukraine. He himself says in his memoir, and had said before, that he spoke to the leaders of Ukraine at least once a week, and more often than I call my wife, I think he once said. I mean, he essentially was directing events as best America could from Washington. Remember also that when push came to shove on Maidan, those days in February, the number of American representatives at Maidan, not only Victoria Nuland, who represented the State Department, but a slew of senators, Democratic and Republican, including McCain and Senator Murphy of Connecticut on the liberal wing, were there egging on the protesters to take power. Remember also that we got at the time a leaked telephone conversation between Nuland of the State Department and the American ambassador in Ukraine, literally naming the names of who would compose the new government once Yanukovych was driven from office. That is why so many people refer to the overthrow of Yanukovych as an American-sponsored coup. Now, it's a little more complicated than that because coups normally take place behind the scenes, in the palace, in the Kremlin. This coup unfolded in the streets. It was the incitement of an extreme wing of the people on Maidan. Not all of them were extremists. Many of them were people of European values and Democrats. But the people who were organized, armed, had direction, and were funded, were these ultra-nationalists, and they were being backed by the United States. And they were the ones who drove Yanukovych to power, while the United States decided who would compose the new government. And the names named, in fact, became the new government. If you now fast forward to today, and you look at the government in Kiev, and that part of Ukraine that it governs, it can hardly be called successful. It can hardly be called democratic. It can hardly be called what was promised at Maidan 4 years ago. It's an exceedingly unpopular government. The president, Poroshenko, I think polls positive ratings 3%, 4%, 5%. Those are catastrophic polls. We say, look at Trump. He's only got a third of the country. I mean, Poroshenko doesn't have 10% of Ukraine. The country is corrupt. Maidan was supposed to be a revolution against oligarchical corruption. It's at every bit as bad today. The only difference being some oligarchs have been excluded, and new oligarchs have joined with old oligarchs to continue to plunder the country. The country is supported primarily by Washington through the International Monetary Fund, through the billions of dollars we give or loan it every year. It's at war with its own people in Donbass because it will not make the steps required by the so-called Minsk peace accord. And now comes the decision by Trump to send weapons. And I think we ought to focus on that decision. It makes absolutely no sense in terms of any military, political, or humane benefit. Trump clearly was opposed to it. He never wanted to send these weapons. He's forced to do it, he thinks in his mind, because he's accused in these Russiagate allegations of being a kind of puppet of the Kremlin. So the way he thinks, well, if I give Ukraine weapons, everybody will see I'm not Putin's puppet and they'll leave me alone to be president. That's not going to happen. But here's the thing. The official reason for giving the weapons is to deter Putin's Russia from attacking Ukraine. There is no possibility, none whatsoever, that Putin would do this. Putin wants this crisis over, done with, negotiated, ended. If Putin ever attacked Ukraine, and that's a separate discussion, John, that would be back in 2014 when he went along with the annexation of Crimea and he supported the rebels in Donbass. But the American media covers the civil war in Donbass as though it has no native or indigenous agency.
Steve, we just have a minute, and we'll go over Maidan again. But from the summary tonight, you'd say we're farther away from solving Ukraine than we're closer. We're farther away now in 2018 than we were in 14.
I would put it like this in stark, somewhat unnuanced terms.
All right, 30 seconds.
A solution as agreed on paper in Ukraine is fully possible. It's wanted by the Kremlin beyond any doubt. It's prevented by the government of Kiev, which knows it would fall to the ultra-right if it negotiated a settlement, and that the ultra-right and this government in Kiev are supported by a war party in Washington whose spokesman today is not Senator McCain, but former Vice President Biden, who is meanwhile running for the presidential nomination in 2020.
Professor Stephen F. Cohen, New York University, Princeton University, Russian History Emeritus, 4 years since Ukraine became a catastrophe. I'm John Batchelor.